As COVID cases surge, the Biden administration is now reconsidering its plan to lift restrictions that have prevented hundreds of thousands of migrants seeking asylum from crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. And as we wait to learn what the administration decides on that, we want to understand what the process is like through the story of one migrant. Her name is Nancy. She and her two kids fled El Salvador and, in their quest for asylum, spent more than a year in a migrant camp. Washington Post reporter Aralise Hernandez has been following Nancy's journey and shared details with Here Now's Peter O'Dowd. Aralise began by describing the migrant camp where Nancy stayed in Matamoros, a Mexican border city across from Brownsville, Texas.
This camp sort of emerged as a result of a change in policy during the Trump administration with regards to asylum. And, you know, what started as a few tents turned into hundreds of tents that had been donated by aid groups. And when you first walk in, you can smell mesquite burning on earthen stoves, see children playing, and just tons and tons of people waiting to be let into the United States to make their cases for asylum.
And that's why you decide that it's a good idea to go there. And in fact, when you visit, you spend a good 2 hours in these camps before you decided to take a break, sit down on a tree stump, and that is when you inadvertently met Nancy. Tell us how that unfolded.
Yeah, I had been there for about 2 hours. It was my first trip. And at one point, I just, you know, got tired and sat down on this tree stump. And without realizing that I was essentially in someone's living room, and it turned out to be Nancy's living room. And she sort of emerged from her tent and realizing my mistake, I asked her, you know, is it okay if I sit here? And we decided to stay in touch from that point on.
And what did she tell you about why she left El Salvador with her two children, Andrea and David?
Her husband was murdered years earlier in El Salvador as a result of some of the extortion and attacks that were happening on folks who were business owners. But it wasn't just his murder that had pushed her to flee El Salvador, but years later, as the family was fighting for, you know, local prosecutors to convict someone for this crime, they finally did. They reopened the case, and in 2018, someone was convicted, and that's when Nancy's problems became more acute because the gang members tried to kidnap her, Nancy's daughter, Andrea. David was being pestered on his way home from school. It got to the point where Nancy wasn't letting them leave the home at all. And in fact, the day after she left El Salvador, per her telling, neighbors sent her WhatsApp messages mentioning that the gang members had come to her house looking for her that very afternoon.
So she does make the journey north. She tries to get to the United States to make an asylum claim. And as you report, she, you know, she tells you that the process was prolonged far beyond what they ever could have imagined. But how does she get into the system in the first place? In other words, what was her contact with the federal government and how did she make this claim?
Individuals who crossed the river and at this point were surrendering to Border Patrol and claiming fear were being taken into custody, put into, you know, the Border Patrol stations, the hieleras, as they call them, these places that, you know, get really cold because the temperature's down.
Yeah.
Right. And they're processed into the system. But instead of being released into the country, which had happened in years prior, they were instead given a slip of paper with a notice to appear, which is like a court date, and then put on the bridge on Brownsville and told to walk across to Matamoros. This is not at all what she was expecting.
And this was August of 2019?
Yes, this was August of 2019 at a time when, you know, President Trump himself was sort of dealing with a large influx of people, particularly from Central America, who were doing the same thing that Nancy was doing, although he tended to be of the opinion that asylum was just way too easy and most of these claims were illegitimate. Therefore, he wanted to make it much more difficult for people to go through this process.
And the reason I ask about the timeline is because it's important to point out how long Nancy and her family are living in this camp in Matamoros. November 2019, her first court hearing. And then she gets a second hearing scheduled for March of 2020. Now, tell me what happens at that point, because I understand she shows up for court, but the government's attorney is just a no-show. What's going on at that point?
This individual didn't show up for whatever reason. It's not clear to me what the actual reason was, but what was happening in the background is we as the United States are starting to get our first cases of the coronavirus, and it's starting to spread very, very quickly. So while Nancy was not aware that this was happening across the country. Immediately after that is when the courts shut down for good. And they thought it wasn't real, that this was just another excuse that the U.S. government was using not to give them due process and a chance to make their claims. Remarkably, the camp itself did not record many cases of coronavirus, but nevertheless, it was the reason why they were kept out for as long as they were.
So that was March. I mean, she'd been in the camp, you know, by the time she finally got out, for like 18 months. That is a tremendous amount of time to live your life outdoors, first of all, and in limbo, not knowing what in the world is going to happen to you and your children. How did that weigh on her and her family?
It really brought her down. I could hear her deteriorating on the phone and in her emotional and mental health. It wasn't just the fact that they were living outdoors and they had suffered a hurricane. It was the persistent threat of violence and insecurity that surrounded them. This is an area that is absolutely dominated and controlled by criminal organizations who run the human trafficking, human smuggling, drug smuggling, you know, industry in that particular part of the border. And so, you know, there had been reports of children being raped, of women being assaulted. So all of this weighed on her tremendously, particularly out of concern for her children. Her daughter had turned 18 in the camp, and she was really scared for her.
Wow. So then February 27th of this year must have felt like a monumental day. That's when she gets to cross the border and finally get out of that camp. What happened? What was that like?
She still didn't want to believe it completely until she actually was across. But she called me that morning and had to undergo, you know, a COVID test. They would be placed on a bus and then, you know, cross over and sent into the shelter system of Catholic Charities for a little bit, processed, and then released to their various destinations. I met her the day after at a hotel that she was renting as she waited to buy her plane tickets.
To LA, right? To see her late husband's family or to reunite with them. What is life like in California now for Nancy and her kids?
All of it was just surreal, just pure unadulterated joy. But I did notice that for Nancy, it's still really difficult for her to be in the moment without her fears darting all over her.
I can imagine she's traumatized. And we have been speaking about Nancy, but what about her two children? You did not speak with them when they were living in the camp in Matamoros, but I understand you did once they got to L.A. What did they tell you about their experience and what it was like for them to finally be freed of that burden of that limbo?
Well, they became different children once they were in the United States. They were much happier. I saw them smile for the first time. But their experience is one that they're loath to talk about. I'll let them explain.
Me siento feliz porque ya sufría mucho.
David is saying here that, you know, he's happy to be in Los Angeles. He's happy to be with his family. But, you know, he suffered a lot in the camp. And, you know, here he has an opportunity to study, which is something he didn't do. He lost 2 years of school while being in that camp, and that this is a different chapter of his life now.
And his sister?
Yeah, she has a different take.
Mi nombre es Andrea.
¿Cómo, cuán distinto fue el cumpleaños de este año comparado con la de ayer?
I asked her in this clip what it was like to celebrate her birthday, which is the event that I went to, you know, with family, how different it is from her experience, because she had celebrated two birthdays while living in the camp in Matamoros. She said, well, it's here, I'm surrounded by family. There I was, all, you know, I had strangers all around me. It's a totally different experience.
Must have been just something to hear their voice after all this time to actually get a chance to speak with them. What was your takeaway after doing this reporting for so long?
Well, I think that for much of the duration of the migrant protection protocols, which was the Remain in Mexico program, as it's better known, for most Americans, I think they weren't aware that this was happening. And the fact that Nancy's story is a window into the costs and the real life consequences of a policy like this. My takeaway from it all is that, you know, we as a country probably need to take a moment to recognize what happened here and what the policy did to people.
What is the status of Nancy's case right now. What's next for her?
Her case is supposed to be transferred to an immigration court in California. Her next court date is October 2022. It speaks to, again, the backlog that exists in the immigration system. But all of that is tenuous. So she's still very much at a new beginning of a long process. Mm.
Aurelis Hernandez covers immigration and the southern border for The Washington Post. We're going to link you to her reporting from the new two-part podcast episode from Post Reports. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. We'll also link you at hereandnow.org. Thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.